So we're in the process of talking about Beis Din, the role that's played by Beis Din, and some of the ramifications that may ensue from the understanding of the role that Beis Din plays in conversion. So we're going to start today with the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis. This is source number 4 of the source sheets on page 2. Avdi the Rabbi Chiya bar Ami atpala lahay obedes kachar nashem insisa. The Eved Rabbi Chiya bar Ami, he took a woman who was not Jewish, and he had her go to a mikvah to immerse in the mikvah for the sake of wanting to be able to marry her. In other words, to bring her into the fold of Judaism. So Amar Rav Yosef Yachin alach shuri ba ubevarata. So Rav Yosef said, I can be makshir her and her daughter, meaning that if she has children, I can say that they're really Jewish. Even though this particular tefillah itself was not in front of a Beis Din, this particular tefillah was just so he could marry her. And in fact, he was an Eved, so this didn't appear to be in a gayrus context. But he says, if she would continue to go to the mikveh afterwards, so she could become kosher. Because we could say about her, milo tavol nidusa, that if she's going to go to the mikveh afterwards for the sake of purifying herself and being a nida, so then that could make her into a Jew, right? Because if one of the major prerequisites of conversion is that you're tovelis in a mikvah. So if she's tovelis in a mikvah, even for the sake of getting out of being a nida, so that could cause her to go to a full state of being Jewish. And therefore, even if the man that she's married to is not a full-fledged Jew, nonetheless, there's a principle that Oved Kochavim Ve'Eved Abba Basi Swal HaVlad Kosher, when she would become Jewish, so then the child could become Jewish. So Tosus asked the question. This is source number 5. And we have a similar Gemara that talks about a man who goes to the mikvah for the purposes of being Tovel Lekeri, that he has an unclean nighttime emission from his body, the nocturnal emission, and that causes him to be a Valkyrie, and then he goes to the mikvah, and we say, even though he was a non-Jew, so we saw him go to the mikvah to cleanse himself from a nocturnal emission, so maybe that should make him into a Jew. So this is sort of peculiar, or both of these are peculiar statements. Presumably, when we speak about a tefillah in front of a Beis Din, it's for the sake of Judaism, it's in front of a Beis Din, in order for a person to become Jewish. So what's going on with these immersions? So says Tosfos, Milo Tavlin Nidusa, Tema de Amal Kaman, the Ger Tzarek Shlosha, the Mishpah Ksive, that we learn that a Ger requires 3 Dayanim, because it says, the Mishpat Achad Yiyadachem Vela Ger, that a process of conversion is a process of Mishpat, it's a process of that requires a Beis Din. Vafilo Laman de Amar, and even if you would hold, we discussed this a little bit beforehand, the Vartorah Chana Mikosher, that we don't paskin like, that maybe you could have 1 Dayan. If the women are going to go to the mikvah to be tovelis themselves, then they don't generally bring a man along. It's not usual protocol when a woman goes to a mikvah to be tovelis herself and being an either. So presumably there are no men there. So just go to skip a couple of lines to the V'yesh Lomar in Tosos at the end of line number 4. So says Tosos, V'yesh Lomar, we require 3 Dayanim. Maybe we only require 3 Dayanim for what we would consider to be the most critical part of the Geirus process, which is the acceptance of the Yoke of Commandments. So Kabbalah Semitzah, so Allah the Tefillah. But maybe the immersion itself would not require a full Beis Din. The Gemara indicates that when a person is Tovel, a woman is Tovelis, that you have 2 Tamidei Chachamim. 2, by the way, doesn't sound like a Beis Din either. 2 sounds like you're missing one, right? It says, so you would have some men around. The Adiv Tvei. But strictly speaking, you only require a bezdin for purposes of the acceptance of yoke of commandments. So if you have a bezdin present when a woman says, "I accept the yoke of commandments," even if when she goes to the mikvah, you don't have a bezdin present, so that would be good enough. So that's a very important yisod. The Tosfos says it's not necessarily agreed upon by everybody, but it is a shita that does get registered in Shulchan Aruch, as we're going to see. And then Tosfos comes up with the idea that maybe if everybody knows that she's going to the mikvah, it's like an anansadi, that is considered as if you have a bezdin standing there because you just the whole world knows that she's going, so therefore it's as if the bezdin is standing there as well. It's as if they are actually standing there. So that's a tremendous kiddush that we don't really accept la halacha. But let's focus on the first thing that Tosfos says. Tosfos says that maybe you only really require me'ikar adin, a bezdin for the kabbalah sol mitzvos, which would mean that let's say we generally require a bezdin for every single phase of the gira process. That's the assumption. Some draw a distinction between mila and tevila. They say, well, mila, maybe that's just the hasaras ha'orla. It's like the hasaras ha'nachrius, that you're getting rid of the uncircumcised part of the person in order to remove the non-Jewish aspect of them. But the mila itself is not what brings them into Judaism. It's a necessary prerequisite to bring a man into Judaism, into conversion. But you then really require the bezdin not so much for the mila, according to many poskim, but rather for the tevila, for the affirmative act of making them Jewish, which is accomplished through the tevila. So we certainly try to have a bezdin for the tevila. We try as well to make sure that there's a bezdin present for the bris mila. I had a couple of cases recently involving adult males who converted. Most of the time, when you have adult males to convert, they've had a medical circumcision when they were younger, and therefore you can't recircumcise them because it's just physically impossible. What you do is a hatafas dam bris, that you prick some blood in the area of the orla. So that's also something that we do in front of a bezdin. So that's easy to do in front of a bezdin because you do it immediately before the person immerses, and you just have a bezdin that observes that they see the blood, that they see that, you know, the prick created a blood. So you have a bezdin with the hatafas dam bris. I recently had a couple of cases where the adult male did not even have a medical circumcision and therefore required a full-fledged circumcision. Now, it's not so simple to have a full-fledged circumcision when you're 25, 30, or 45 years old. It's a much bigger deal. It requires more general anesthesia. It requires a medical doctor, generally speaking. It's a urologist, somebody who really knows how to perform that type of surgery. But in order for that surgery to be acceptable as a bris mila, it has to be performed by a frum moel. You need to have an Orthodox Jewish urologist who's going to be performing the bris mila. It's not always so easy in every single town to find individuals who have that expertise. So, done generally speaking in a hospital. I mean, the cases that we dealt with, I dealt with a case recently, which was done in a hospital, but it raises an interesting question. It was done in a hospital, but we're saying that this should ideally be done in front of a bezdin, right? That really all aspects of the gerus should be done in front of a bezdin. How do you get the bezdin? It's one thing to have the doctor, but you have to also make sure you have other members of the bezdin. So we had to make arrangements that there would be an allowance for two other rabbis from the community to stand nearby. The whole discussion is the mohel allowed to be part of the bezdin. So Eliezer's a tshuva on this, and he concludes it's okay for the mohel to be part of the bezdin. So you just need two others, according to Eliezer, in addition to the mohel. But we had to make arrangements that these two people would be allowed to stand nearby, even if they're, you know, separated a little bit by glass, but that they would be able to see and look and be present standing over the mila to be able to observe the mila, because you are supposed to have a bezdin present for the bris mila.
And the requirement of a frum person doing it, what's the source for that?
Well, the source for that is simply that you have to make sure that you have a mohel, that you have somebody who is a qualified individual. If you have somebody who's not Jewish, not, you know, himo yimo, you can't have an individual who's not minamulim himself, somebody who is not circumcised himself, is not commanded in circumcision, who will performing the mitzvah bris milah, then you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah properly. There is a discussion among poskim as to whether we say that, you know, mumar, you know, if you have a mumar, so he's also removed from the parsha of it being a sufficient ben bris in order for the milah to be valid. There are different opinions, but why get yourself into trouble? Better to have somebody who is orthodox as a tshuva by Moshe Rosen, who's a major posik in America, as a tshuva about this. He says even though there are grounds to be makel, he's worried that it would lead to a misapplication of the halacha in cases where it would really be, you know, problematic. So he says across the board, it's important that, you know, the Migdor Milsa, at the very least, you should always make sure to have a famol. Some say that it's even the ikuba. So you want to make sure that it's an orthodox mol. That's important. Certainly, if it would be a non-Jewish mol, then it would be nothing to discuss. Now, there are cases that would...
If the mitzvah is to be circumcised, then maybe it doesn't make a difference.
No. The mitzvah is that you have to have a proper bismillah. The part of the qualifications of a proper bismillah is that it be performed by a proper moel. There's the whole deal whether a woman can do bismillah. It's the whole story about Tzipora, whether she can or she can't. Different deos, you know, the mice it's not done, but you know that's there are major discussions about who could do bismillah or not. So the lowest level in terms of the different stages of conversion that would require a bezdin is milah. There are many mekilim b'di'evit if there wasn't a bezdin that was present at the time of the bris milah. And the second is tefillah. Tefillah is viewed by many as the ikar, essential part of what brings the person into the fold of Judaism. So for that, you know, certainly you would figure that you need a bezdin.
To view the actual tefillah.
For women as well. There's the whole discussion you see based on this Tosos. Maybe an anan sadi is good enough. You're standing outside, you hear a splash, maybe that's good enough. So Ravadi Yosef has a long shuv about this in Yibi Omer, which he talks about, what if you're standing outside and you kind of hear what's going on, you know, you see the woman walking inside the room, and you know, and you have a good sense that she's jumping into the mikveh, you have a mikveh lady who's standing over her and all that. So he says that it's really not something that should be relied upon, and that it's really, he says that if you're in a situation where, like, the authorities won't allow it and the person won't be able to convert, so maybe then you can perhaps find some sort of a leniency. But there's a tshuva by Rav Moshe Feinstein where he suggests that if the bezdin is not actually in the room, he says in the cheder, watching the immersion take place, that the tefillah might not be valid altogether. The tefillah might not be valid altogether. So why take chances?
Now you'll say, even with the mikvah lady,
you'll say, correct, that's correct. Now you'll say at the same time that it's important to ensure that modesty be preserved. One of the major hallmarks of a Jewish woman, and for that matter a Jewish man, is to act with modesty. So isn't it, you know, immodest watching a woman go into the mikvah? So what we provide, what many Bati Din nowadays provide, certainly our bezin at the CRC and most of the Bati Din that I'm familiar with, they provide that the woman wears a robe, that she wears some sort of a robe. Some places it's a sheet, but it completely is a loose fitting robe or a sheet that covers her, but where there is space between the robe and the body on the inside, so it doesn't serve as a chatzitza, it doesn't serve as a separation when she actually immerses herself in the mikvah. So therefore the modesty is preserved, but at the same time she also is able to immerse in a fashion which is kosher. So that's our general practice, and then as soon as we see that she goes completely inside of the water, it has to be all that, every strand of hair has to go in the water, the whole entire body goes inside the water as she's going in with the rope, so then the bezdin moves away and goes faces towards the wall so that the bezdin doesn't have to watch her as she's coming out of the water. We know that if we see her afterwards, she obviously came out of the water. If you see her inside the water, then you see her alive afterwards, it means she came out of the water. That much is pretty clear, you can rely upon that. And then the bezdin just listens to her as she makes the bracha on the tefillah afterwards, and then meets up with her again after she's fully clothed. So that's the way in which it's done. But here the question is b'di'evit. So Tosa seems to be implying that b'di'evit, if there wasn't a bezdin present at the tefillah, it was just that she went by herself because she was a nida and she needed to immerse, and therefore she herself was clearly entered into the mikvah for mitzvah purposes, shall we say. So then that would be good enough Or even maybe we'll say she had in mind that this would satisfy her geirus requirement, would be good enough as long as there was a bezdin present for the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah. That's what Tosfos says. Now, not everybody agrees with that. So if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, let's just turn to the Shulchan Aruch for a second and try to find the requisite source where I put this in the source materials. I think I put it maybe later on. Hold on a second. Or maybe it's in the original.
15?
Maybe it's in the original source materials. So here it is. Thank you very much. So source 15. Calling Yane Ager. This is in Shulchan Aruch Yerideya Siman Reish Samach Esif Gimel. Calling Yane Ager. Ben Leodia Mitzvah Sekaplam Min Amila Ben Atzvila. So the Shulchan Aruch starts off with the assumption, which is really the opinion of Rambam and others, that you need for all of the different stages of the geirus, you need a proper bezin. Sarach shi v'gimel aksherim lodur. So this for sure everybody would agree l'chatzkila. Mi'u davka l'chatzkila. So he says, okay, everybody agrees l'chatzkila, but what about b'di'evin? But b'di'evin, im lo ma'al tovel el b'fnei beis of a layla, afilu lo tovel l'shem geirus. B'di'evin, if the person did not have the milo or the tzvila, except in front of two, why do you need two? Just so that there would be people that can attest that it actually happened. Afilu lo tovel l'shem geirus, even if it was just done for the mitzvah, a man who's going to the mikvah because he had a nocturnal emission, l'isha tovel l'kiryo, v'isha shetovel l'nidasa, or a woman who's being tovel because she was a nidar v'ger, or mutzav yisraelis. So that is good enough. Except for the Kabbalah Samitzvah, was absolutely indispensable that it be number one in the daytime, and number two would be in front of a bezin of a gimel dayonim. Now, who is this going like? The first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch clearly is going like Tosfos. So the Shulchan Aruch actually quotes this Tosfos halacha. You figure it was shocking enough to find that Tosfos said it in the first place, but they would actually make it into normative halacha is even more shocking. However, we find that the Shulchan Aruch also quotes the second opinion. She says, according to the Rif, that's a question, whether that's true according to the Rif. Certainly according to the Rambam, if the person did not have the milo or the tefila or anything in front of any specific part of the geirus process in front of a full-fledged bezdin, this would be me'akev also be Israelis. The only question is sort of on a b'di'evid level, maybe b'di'evid it would be okay. So this is kind of interesting because we say it is mi'akev, so it's mi'akev for that person, but if this woman would then have a child, so then we wouldn't pass to the child. That's kind of, you know, an interesting pshara, but it's again a way of understanding the interpretation of the Gemara. So, yes.
Laila is a problem.
Laila is a problem because it's a mishpat. The whole process of conversion, the whole ritual, is supposed to be like a judicial proceeding. Judicial proceedings have to be during the daytime, so therefore a geirus has to be performed during the daytime and not during the nighttime. So we always do a geirus during the daytime. Now this is the approach of Tosfos. Now,
what's that? Yes. Going a goy. Going to tefillah for nocturnal emission?
No, because this person, this person wants to be Jewish. They want to be Jewish, and therefore they're performing the mitzvahs. They're performing the mitzvahs of being Jewish. It's just that they didn't happen to go to the mikvah beforehand. They want to be Jewish. They just didn't get around to going to the mikvah. That's the issue. Rosh Shlomo Warman has a very interesting tshuva in the Sheiris Yosef, where he talks about a family that adopted a child and they brought up the child Jewish, and they did a bris milah, you know, everything fine and good, and it just didn't occur to them that they're supposed to do a tefillah, you know, because it was a non-Jewish child and they adopted him and did a bris milah, bring him up Jewish, and now the child's like 15 years old and he's already been gone to a bar mitzvah, and then of course, we never, you know, did a tefillah in front of a bezdin. So he suggests, well, you know, the child undoubtedly at various points in time went with his father in Erev Yom Kippur to be tovel in the mikvah, so and the whole world saw him there, you know. You go to a mikvah Erev Yom Kippur, you certainly have enough people around to, you know, constitute a bezdin, often they're in the mikvah with you. He says that maybe that should count, you know, based on this principle, even though it wasn't a specifically convened bezdin, why don't we say this is a milo tovel the curio situation, so you wanted to rely upon it. Halacha l'maisa, he wanted to, you know, apply this idea, because after all, he's going to the mikvah. He's going to the mikvah for yadus, for Jewish purposes. So maybe you figure, okay, that's going to be good enough. So it's interesting. So he wrote this Hoshtiko, which I'm looking at, and I'm just, you know, my jaw is dropping, basically, as I'm reading this this essay of his. Then he wrote at the end, he was a Talmid of Rabbi Eliezer Silver. So he says that he posed the questions, Rabbi Eliezer Silver, afterwards, he has this in a lot of his essays, in the Sheva Yosef, he's writing a Lach HaLamaisa. I asked Rabbi Eliezer Silver what he thought, and he said, a Yashikayak, it's really wonderful, I agree with what you said, everything is great. So in this particular case, Rabbi Eliezer Silver said to me, Yashikayak, this is a really wonderful Shtikal Torah, but you know, you should come in a Bez and have the person come and be told in a mikvah in front of a Bez. Not so comfortable with this. Not so comfortable with this halacha lemaisa. You don't really rely upon this halacha lemaisa. But it's interesting just from a b'di'evit perspective. It again goes to the core issue. You have all these people nowadays who are running around and saying, oh, maybe the Kabbalah or mitzvos is not an integral part of the Geirus process. Because when the Rambam speaks about what a Geir has to do, he says the Geir should do Mila, the Geir should do Tefillah, the Kabbalah or mitzvos isn't specifically spelled out. Now, the truth of the matter is, it is spelled out in the Rambam basically as a preamble. And the Rambam says, if I have somebody who wants to become Jewish, and they want to accept upon themselves Kabbalah or mitzvos, so these are the things that the person has to do. So it's almost sort of incidentally alluded to by the Rambam as a prerequisite for the Geirus process, and that's what Bezalel Zsolti writes, and others that the Rambam understood it as a prerequisite. And in fact, if you take a look at source 2, I have it here at source 2, the Rambam at the beginning of Perek Yigimah of Yisarebiya, so he says, there used to be that a person would bring three things. They would have bris mila, they would tefillah, they bring a korban. What are the next four words that the Rambam says? Can anybody read the next four words the Rambam says? What does he say? What does it sound like to you? It sounds like Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, right? So Rambam says, so what does he have to do? So Rabbi Tzal Zsolti argues that the Rambam doesn't record Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs as part of the ritual of conversion because it's the essence of conversion. It's saying somebody wants to convert. What does that mean he wants to convert? It means that he wants to accept the Ol of Torah. That is what Geirus means. The word Geirus means Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. That's what Shlomo Amar spells that a little bit more. The former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel says, Liz Gayer, the word Liz Gayer, it means I'm accepting upon myself the yoke of commandments. I am becoming a resident of your people. How do I become a resident of your people? What does the Gemara in Yevama say? The Gemara in Yevama says, when Ruth said to Naomi, Amech Ami, she was saying, I am prepared to accept Taryag Mitzvos. That's what the words mean. That's what his Gayer means. So, of course, that's an essential part of the process. So, if that is the prerequisite, as Rabbi Tzal Zsolti says, it's the essence of conversion, as Rabbi Amar explains. It's the definition of conversion. So, of course, if I'm going to single out one part of conversion, that definitely, unquestionably, non-negotiably is going to require the presence of a Beis Din, that's going to be the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah. So that's interpretation number one of this Gemara. Now, interestingly, yes?
Who would be Tovel Lekero? A goy doesn't need to feel for.
Now, we're talking about, again, this person was a goy. They were a goy. Halakhically, maybe they're still a goy before they step into the mikvah. But they think of themselves as Jewish. So the Nemuke Yosef says, this is the entire Kiddush of the Gemara. The Nemuke Yosef says, I'm going to come up with a second shot because if we only had one shot, we'd have to go home. We wouldn't fill up our time, and that just wouldn't work, you know, from a video perspective. We have to, like, you know, take up a certain amount of time. So the Nemuke Yosef says, I'm going to give you pshat number two in the Gemara. It says pshat number two in the Gemara is that I would have thought that this immersion in a mikvah doesn't count towards geirus because it's not l'shem yadus. What does he mean it's not l'shem yadus? He doesn't mean it's not for the sake of Jewishness. It means it's not for the sake of becoming Jews. The person doesn't have in mind that through this tefillah, they're going to become Jewish. So I might think that it doesn't work. So he says, Kamash Malan, and he quotes the Yerushalmi that seems to say this explicitly in the name of Yossi Ben Bun, that because of the fact that it was done for the purpose of Kedushas Yisrael, the person is doing it as part of living the sacred life of a Jewish person who goes to the mikvah for these matters, therefore it's good enough. This is a very important shot in the Gemara. It's very important in another context as well, because there's a major dispute among later day poskim, achronim, regarding whether if a person gets a bris milah for purposes of being Jewish, meaning for purposes of they think of themselves as Jewish, but they're not necessarily doing it to convert. They just think that they're Jewish, so they're getting a bris milah. Then it turns out they really need a bris milah for the sake of conversion. Is the bris milah good or is the bris milah not good? Rav Shmuel Salant famously ruled, as the Rav Tzvi Pesach, that it is good. As long as the bris milah is for the purpose of Jewishness, it doesn't matter if it's for the purpose of conversion. And one of the major proof texts for this position is this Gemara. This Gemara, certainly if we understand this Gemara, the way that the Nemukeh Yosef understood the Gemara. Not everybody agreed, but Yecheskel Abramsky disagreed, and he said, no, the conversion has to be very specifically for the bris milah. Has to be very specifically for the sake of conversion, and even if the person did it for the sake of Jewishness, if that's good and not good enough, if it wasn't, you'd have to presumably do a toughest on bris afterwards. If it was not done for the sake of conversion, Moshe even seems to indicate that way. The consensus, however, of modern-day poskim is to be makel on this issue. But it doesn't usually come up in the context of the adult. It could come up in the context of the adult. You have like a Russian immigrant who never had a bris milah, and he finds himself a molo that does a bris milah for adults, says, I need a bris milah because I never got one, and I'm Jewish, and he gets a bris milah. And then it turns out that they do an investigation of his halakhic status and discover 6 months later that he wasn't really Jewish to begin with. Is it a good bris milah or not? What generally happens is not that situation, but a different situation, namely where you have a katan, where the moel doesn't know that this katan isn't really Jewish, but it turns out that the mother had a conservative, non-orthodox conversion that wouldn't be recognized halakhically, or just turns out that the katan wasn't really Jewish. They were relying upon a non-acceptable conversion, or it was the product of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, but they didn't know to do the bris milah for the sake of conversion. It was done just for the sake of, hey, this is a Jewish child, I'm doing a bris milah. So then this child later on wants to undergo a conversion. Either it's the parents that bring the child for conversion, say a few years later, to bring the child to be immersed in a mikvah, or the child when he's 20 years old. We've had this a number of times. Wants to go through a conversion, discovers there's a problem with his lineage halakhically, but he's able to prove that he had a bris milah that was performed by an orthodox mohel, no problem there. Only problem is that it wasn't done for the sake of conversion. It was only for the sake of Jewishness. So what do we do? So generally speaking, the poskim say, Shmuel Salam, it's based on Frank. Good enough. We're not going to require a toughest dam bris. We're not going to require a pricking of the blood in the area. Rather, we're just going to do a tefillah. We'll do an immersion, a kabbalah sol mitzvos, and that's going to be good enough. So in the Sefer Mishnah Sager, interestingly enough, this is by one of the sons of the Mishnah Halakos, so Menashe Klein, it's his son. I think about Binyamin Klein, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not 100% sure. I think that's his first name. So he wrote a sefer called Mishnah Sager, which goes through a lot of the halakhos of Davis, and he quotes this machlokas, he cites this machlokas, and he says that maybe you can make an argument. This is not an argument the post can generally make, but he says maybe you can make an argument that it's worse in the case of the katan, of the 8 day, of what, 10 day old boy, probably is usually 8 days old, who was done for the sake of Jewishness. They did it on the 8 day. So for this 8 day old boy, had milah for the sake of Jewishness, in the case of the Gemara that the Nemukeh Yosef was commenting on, you had a man who deliberately very consciously went to the mikvah for the sake of some sort of Kedushas Yisrael. So there was some sort of an intention from the Ger himself. You're dealing with an adult who goes to the mikvah for that very purpose. But here, in the case of the Bris Milah, so if you have an adult who gets a Bris Milah for the sake of Kedushas Yisrael, you could say that's in the same category. You have an 8-day-year-old kid. An 8-day-old kid is not thinking, oh, I'm doing this for the sake of... He doesn't even know what's happened to him. We generally assume, right? I mean, his neshama knows what's happening to him. But in terms of his conscious state, his outward conscious state, he's not having a kavanah. He's not saying he didn't mean mukhan and mizuman as he's about to have the bris milah. So maybe you could say that there's much less of a state of consciousness and awareness, and therefore it's on a lesser level in terms of being able to say that this is l'shem kedushas Yisrael if it wasn't really done for the sake of conversion in front of a bezin. We don't draw that distinction. He suggests that distinction. We generally assume no. That if all that you need is a mindset of Shem Kedushas Yisrael, so that's good enough, even if the Bris Milah is being performed on the Katan for that purpose as well. But that's pshat number two to Mukha Yosef. You see, all these pshatim have ramifications, Ladina. And now let's go to pshat number three. Yes?
Is the Bris Milah performed before it has a formal training to become a Jew, or afterwards?
Bris Milah is, well, let's talk about the two different types of cases. You could do Bris Milah on a katan, where we have a ger katan mapilin oso adas bezdin, where bezdin determines that it's appropriate to perform a conversion with respect to a minor. So sometimes that's a determination that can be made when the minor is just 1 month old or so. It's just been adopted by two from parents, but the bezdin determines it's going to be an unmitigated benefit, as a chus, for the child to be brought up in this household, to be brought up in a Shabbos atmosphere, in a kosher atmosphere, in a Torah atmosphere. He's going to be sent to yeshiva, he's going to be brought up to live a life of Torah mitzvahs. It's going to be truly wonderful, and therefore the bezdin makes an assessment, al das bezdin, that it's appropriate to perform the bris milah. So the child that doesn't have the training per se, I mean, the malach taught him, you know, well, I don't know, did the malach teach him anything when he was a goy? That's the question. Presumably it's only taught, you know, the Jewish child. So the child doesn't have that sense of awareness, but it's furnished by the bezdin. If you have a gadol, if you have an adult who converts, so we would never perform the bris milah before the gadol. That's what the Gemara indicates. The Gemara indicates the person has to be aware of Torah mitzvahs. They have to be aware of skar and onish. They have to be aware of what it means to be a Jew. Jews are persecuted. It's like how it's difficult, schwer, to sein a yid. It's hard to be Jewish. So all of that has to be communicated to the candidate, and the candidate has to show a sincere willingness to accept Torah mitzvahs before even the bris milah can be performed. But we say that once the ger evidences a real sincerity and commitment, say malino samiyat. So then we do it immediately. We don't hold it up at that point. That's part of the mitzvah, shiui mitzvah lo mashina. We don't delay it. Okay, fine. But that sincerity has to be exhibited. You don't do it beforehand. Okay, so, and that comes up from time to time as well. Especially you have this is interesting because sometimes we have this situation where you have an adult who needs to have a full-fledged bris milah, and there's a urologist in town, wants to have the bris milah and then come in for the final interview, but maybe he's not going to pass the final interview. So at what stage does the bezdin have the requisite comfort level to authorize the bris milah to go forward? We've had to make that determination in a couple of cases recently, where that it has to be part of the cheshbon. You don't want to authorize the bris milah until it's actually time. And part of the bris milah process, when it's done separately from the tefillah, is if you look in the Gemara, you're really supposed to discuss the acceptance of mitzvahs at that time as well. Not only kabbalas ol mitzvahs at the time of the tefillah, there should be a kabbalas ol mitzvahs that's evidenced at the time of the bris milah as well. Okay, so now let's go on to a third explanation of this Gemara. Third explanation of this Gemara is that of the Rif. So that's what he said. The Rif says, oh, if I'm dealing with this individual, I'm not going to accept for purposes of allowing this person to get married, if they had their tefillah not in front of a bezdin, we're not going to say the kabbalas ol mitzvahs is different. The tefillah has to be entirely in front of the bezdin. But then the Rif has this puzzling lashon. If you take a look, this is source 6, okay? Source 6 is the Rif. So let's take a look at how the Rif interprets the Gemara and how the Rif is understood by the Shiltei HaGiborim. So the Rif says, Am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi milo tavel l'shem kiryo. We're dealing with it's somebody who was originally not Jewish, we want to know, do we treat them as Jewish or not? Well, didn't the person go and when they were acting as a Jew, didn't they go to the mikvah because of nocturnal emissions? So sugi d'shmaya tochenu explains this is the understanding. So you'll ask the kasha Tosos asked. The Rif came before Tosos, but he asked the same kasha. So you ask the kasha. Does in Rabbi Yochanan say that a ger requires the best in my time mishpat sibbe the kaiyan de hilchasi lo kasha hadra vasi Rabbi Shimon Levi the evenu de lo paslin and lebre whoever tava l'shem kiryo. So he says it's all just b'di'evit. He loved Yolahu lo b'tava l'shem kiryo. If he wasn't a ger, then he would not have been tovel for purposes of his carry. If he wasn't a ger, what does that? What do those words mean? When Rabbi Yochanan says that you need a bezdin of gimel, what that means is that the chatzkila we're not going to give him the rights of a ger to let him marry a Jewish woman and so forth. We're not going to allow him to marry a bas yisrael. Add the tovel b'fnei gimel until he's tovel in front of a bezdin. But if let's say this person then goes on and builds a family, so we're not going to penalize, you know, the descendants in any way. So the Shaviyah Gibarim says, wait a second, what's the lechatzkila b'di'evit that the Rif is playing with here? And you found this in the Shulchan Aruch too. Midibei Rabbeinu Nireh ki b'di'evit shetavo b'knei beis harei zeger li'in delo paslinin liberei. So it sounds like as long as I have edus, as long as I have a reliable testimony that the person went to a mikvah, I don't require a bezdin. And b'di'evit, if there was no bezdin for the mikvah. And remember, the Rif doesn't distinguish between mikveh and kabbalah or mitzvos. It sounds a little bit like, if I don't have a bezdin for anything, but the person had the milah, he had his tefillah, right? Immersed himself in a mikvah. It sounds like b'di'evid, as long as he had a mind to become Jewish, then the person's going to become Jewish. So that would really be a low standard. It turns out that we don't really need a kosher bezdin. Also, remember, to be a bezdin, you need all kinds of qualifications. I mean, the bezdin has to be made up of people who are at least kosher to be edim, and then they have to be even of a higher degree of integrity and stature in order to be kosher dayanim, that we have all of these traits. They have to be anshi emes, soni batza, and all kinds of lofty things in order to qualify as a dayanim. And if we find certainly that somebody is puzzled in some very blatant fashion, certainly somebody's not a shomer mitzvos, then they're disqualified from being a dayan. I don't have a bezdin, and we assume that we generally don't have a we don't have a kosher geirus altogether. We don't even have a suffolk geirus to worry about. But Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in which he writes that if a person went to a reform conversion in which there's no kabbalah or mitzvahs at all, which could be presumed that the rabbis who are standing there, it may not even all be men. Most of the reform conversions that I have, you have women who are sitting there, and they certainly are disqualified from being dayanim. So he says that there's not even the slightest scintilla of a question of them being Jewish. So therefore, if such a person, let's say, would be married to a Jewish, let's say it was a woman, and she was married to a Jewish man, or a man who was married to a Jewish woman, they become divorced, so should you do a get l'chumrah? Should you do a get just to be on the stringent side? So he says, no, don't even do a get l'chumrah, because then it adds credence to the mistaken assumption that people will think that these people are really Jewish. It happens, it's not our practice. I just want to make that clear. The reason why this is not our practice, we will do the get under those circumstances, and there are three different reasons we'll do the get under those circumstances. Reason number one is because the people are not going to be under these mistaken assumptions, because we regularly do gittin when there are question marks as to whether a get really needs to be done, just to be on the safe side, so that there not be any doubts going forward regarding the ability of this person to marry or the ability of this person to get shiduchim. You don't want people to abstain, let's say in the Orthodox community, from dating somebody because they'll say, well, I don't know, maybe your conversion really was valid and you needed a get, and you know, my rabbi says I shouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole because I'll have children and it'll be a question about the legitimacy of the children. So just not to take any chances. Also, we write in the whenever there's a question about a person's conversion, we will write in the documentation of the get, we will say this does not constitute a certification with respect to the person's Jewishness, because that's not what we are determining when we're doing a get. We're not determining that the person is definitely Jewish. We're saying if the person is Jewish, so to be on the safe side, we're going to do the get. There's a stamp. There's an official, not in the get, in the certification document, the pitur, the tudas gerushin. This is stamped. This is, and it's not anything which is pejorative. It's just like an automatic stamp that's put on any such document. Thirdly, there's the Shita of Rav Soloveitchik. Now, the Shita of Rav Soloveitchik is a tremendous Kiddush. It's quoted by Rav Schechter in his Sefer Divrei HaRav, which itself is quoted from a book that was authored by Rabbi Dr. Walter Wurzberger. Rabbi Dr. Walter Wurzberger was a PhD in philosophy. He was very much respected by Rav Soloveitchik. He was the rabbi of Congregation Shari Tefillah, I believe, in Far Rockaway in New York. Big time, I had him as a philosophy professor when I was at Yeshiva College. And Rabbi Wurzberger heard from the Rav asserting Kabbalah that the Rav of Soloveitchik was very concerned about this opinion of the Rif as interpreted by the Shotei HaGiborim, that whenever he had a non-Orthodox convert, he would be worried that there's at least a suffix, at least a doubt that this person is Jewish. So according to the Rav, if such a person would then undergo an Orthodox conversion, you wouldn't make a bracha because it might be a bracha levatala because maybe the person was originally Jewish. I looked in the original source of where Rabbi Walter Wurzberger wrote this up. I think it was in Tradition. He was the editor-in-chief of Tradition for a long period of time. It's in another book that he published as well. So I looked at the original source. The original source quotes Rabbi Walter Wurzberger as saying that Rav Soloveitchik would be koshish even with respect to Reform converts. If you have that concern, presumably he's talking about Reform converts who went to the mikveh. They have Reform conversions nowadays, but they don't even go to the mikveh. Then there's nothing to discuss. They don't have a bezi, you don't even have tefillah, you have nothing. But he quotes that the Rav was concerned that maybe the person really would, at least the chumrah, be treated as Jewish, in which case, if you would be concerned about the opinion of Rav Soloveitchik, you really, for that reason as well, would have to make sure in all of these cases, whenever a person underwent any kind of conversion, to do a get for that reason as well. But take a look at the way in which the Rav is quoted by Rav Schechter in the Divrei HaRav. HaRav Shmuel Wurzberger Zal. You see? I'm not making it up. HaRav Shmuel Wurzberger Zal Kosov. This is in source number 7. B'shem Rabbeinu, in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, Shayachoshesh L'geir Shinaseh Sayidei HaKonservativim. Ah, that he was worried about conservative gerus. So I said, I looked in the source and the word reform was there, so he cleaned it up a little bit. So he said he was worried about conservative gerus. I could argue with Moshe who said reform, you don't have to worry, so we're going to get rid of that word. We're just conservative. He's worried about conservative gerus, but dunek esafe gerus to treat it like it might be dubious gerus. Lachush, because he was concerned, he was worried about Hadladas, a Shilte Gibarim, the Yavamas, a Shilte Gibarim. Which Shilte Gibarim? The Shilte Gibarim that we just read in Source 6. Isn't it convenient to have it right in front of you, right? The Kavanah Sarif, where he explained that what the Rif meant, Shema Shigir Tzorak Shosha, that which a Ger requires three Dayanim, there is Mishbra Ksible, they, Hainadavka Lechatkila, that's only in Lechatkila, Ab Ein Zamiakim Bidiyevit, but the way that the Shilte Gibarim understood the Rif's understanding of the Sugya in the Gemara was that it's not Miakim at the end of the day Bidiyevit, not just Tefillah, but Kabbalah Samitzus, the entire kin and kaboodle. The Rif didn't distinguish between Tefillah and Kabbalah Samitzus. He's just talking about the Geirus process in general. So that would be really a tremendous Kiddush, but again, we're not going to assume that such a person would really be Jewish, because we assume that you really do need a Bez in the Ikuva. Certainly, for Kabbalah Samitzus, you require a Bez in the Ikuva, and even the Rif would say that we're not going to allow this person, the Chatzkila, to get married based on such a Gerus, right? He said that Lomen Estevinen Le Bas Yisrael, but nonetheless, you'd have to at least be Machma for Gittin purposes, so that would be reason number 3. To be mocked for gifting purposes, another very important application of how you interpret this Gemara. And we're not done yet. We have even more. So far, we have 3 different interpretations of the Gemara. We have of Tosfos, that the Gemara indicates, oh, you only really need a bezin with respect to Kabbalah Samitzus, at least first answer Tosfos. You have the Muke Yosef, who says, even if a person, the Chiddush is, if a person goes through a process or goes through a ritual requirement of Geirus, having in mind, I'm doing this because I'm Jewish, for Kedushas Yisrael, even though they're not intending to do it for the purpose of conversion itself, that's good enough. That has ramifications, as we mentioned, with respect to Bris Milah. And interpretation number three of the Rif, as understood by the Shilta Gibarim, is this whole Bezdin thing is only the Chatzkila and not Bidiyevi, which has ramifications, obviously, for non-Orthodox conversions, at least in terms of whether you have to be Koshesh to require a get in those types of cases. I think that the Rav is a Kiddush, by the way. I don't think that most authorities hold like Rav Soloveitchik. His own brother didn't hold like him. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, when he would do a gerus of somebody who underwent a non-Orthodox conversion, he would always make a bracha, because he held that the first gerus was batel mevutel, was completely null and void, there's nothing to speak about, there's nothing to talk about, and that has always been the practice followed by our own Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz as well, he always does the gerus, the Orthodox gear, for somebody who underwent previously a non-Orthodox gear, with a bracha, without any question, not worried about bracha levatala, that the assumption is that the previous gear was null and void. But, as I mentioned, it's one of the considerations as to why we are machmir to always do a get. Another reason we do a get, I merely mentioned two reasons so far. One is you want to make life easier for the other spouse, that nobody should question their ability to remarry. Number two, you never know, maybe the gay risk was really valid. Number three is, you don't want to discourage other people who, let's say this person doesn't really need a get, you don't want to discourage other people who really might need a get. They'll say, oh, this person from my synagogue came to the Bezdin and they sent her away saying you don't need a get, so I'm not going to bother going to this Bezdin either. And then that person really is Jewish and is married to a Jewish man and is not going to come to the Bezdin, so therefore that's another reason. Yes?
So you get a situation where you have a couple that comes, and they both, let's say, went through a questionable conversion, and they decide they become frum later in life, they get involved in CDN or whatever, they decide they want to become frum, so they go through the process, but they've been married, they've been married for 10 years, they had a quote-unquote ceremony with a quote-unquote ketubah, but their conversion was, we've all seen the nice lovey-dovey ketubah that are out there, that aren't really ketubah, but they had it, but there's a question, the reason they're converting is they found out as they were becoming more observant that their gerus probably wasn't good. What's the status of that couple immediately after the conversion? Are they married? Are they not married?
So what we always do in those situations is right after the conversion, we marry them off. They have a chuppah v'kiddushin after the conversion. Okay, that's really, an important part of what needs to be done. Now, is there a need for havchana, for them to be separate from each other for 3 months beforehand, so you can make sure that any child that's conceived, you'll know if the child was conceived after the conversion as opposed to before the wife converted. That's a separate discussion as to what degree you require havchana. Can you rely on pregnancy tests to make sure that the woman wasn't pregnant at the time of conversion? That's a separate deal. However, once you're done with whatever waiting period would be required, then it would be necessary to remarry them at that point in time. We're not going to rely upon the first kiddush, generally speaking.
If they come out of the mikveh, they're Jewish, do you make them wait 24 hours? Do you do the chuppah right there? How does it usually work?
I've been present when the chuppah was done mamish in the mikveh itself. I was with Rav Schechter.
Oh,
I was with Rav Schechter in the Upper West Side of Manhattan mikveh. Okay, somebody brought a talis, four poles, we held them up, we did the chuppah, sheva brachos, the whole 9 yards. It was all done mamish in the mikveh itself. I've never, I think they said it was the first time they ever had a wedding performed in, the ante room or whatever, the inner lobby of the mikveh. But I have seen it done even
so
then. And I've had situations. I was in Dallas, and we did a conversion, and afterwards the mikveh was in the synagogue building, and then we went outside of the synagogue building. There was a nice yard over there. We held up a chuppah. We performed the wedding on the spot. So sometimes it's done mamish on the spot.
They had a minion for the one.
I think we did. I think we brought along from. Yeah, yeah. You have to have a minion. Let's say show. Yeah.
If the kids converted as well, can they be edim for the parents in that situation?
I'm sorry.
Can the kids be edim for that wedding?
No, kids. Oh, I see what you're saying, because kids get shikatan. Yeah, no, we wouldn't have them be Aiden, but it's an interesting question, See, everybody's not really halakhically related to each other. Okay. Very interesting question. Okay. So that's answer number three. Okay, now answer number four is given by the Bach, and you also find this in the Magen Mishnah as well. It's really a very, mistaber understanding of the Gemara, which is that the Bach and the Magen Mishnah say, like you look at the Lashon of the Rif, although the Rif himself doesn't seem to follow through on this idea, but look at the one line of the Rif, in the third line, he says, the Ilav Giyaru lo abatavol, the Shem Kiryo. If he wasn't a Ger, he wouldn't have been Tovol Shem Kiryo. So the Magen Mishnah and the Bach say, you know what the Gemara means? The Gemara means the person, we see the person is noeg like a Jew, that if he's a man, he's going to the mikveh every single morning, whatever, you know, to be Tovol the Kiryo. So woman, whenever she's a Nida, she's going to the mikveh and she's doing everything that she needs to do. So we have a question, whether there was a proper tefillah in front of a bezin. Maybe there's no record in this case. There's no bezin that we can ask. So he says that if we have a question, the fact that the person is doing all of these hanhagas, so that's megaleh, that they must have had a proper geiris at one point in time. They must have had a tefillah in front of a bezin at one point in time. Of course you need a tefillah in front of a bezin. We're just trying to find the requisite proof or documentation or evidence that's going to demonstrate that the person really had a proper tefillah in front of a bezin, and for whatever reason the documentation is missing, there's nobody who can testify about it, but this is something that we can marshal as proof that this must have happened. So therefore he says that if you have that shot in the Gemara, so then there is no indication in the Gemara whatsoever that you're allowed to bypass the notion of a Beis Din, even insofar as the tefillah, it is indispensable. The question is, what is the standard of proof through which somebody can prove that there really must have been a proper Beis Din present? That's the idea. That's how, you know, the Bach and how the Magen Mishnah, they both understand the sugi. If you understand like them, so then there would be really no wiggle room. I have to tell you, I have never seen a Beis Din Mekel, you know, at least in terms of viewing somebody l'chatzchila as Jewish for allowing them to get married within the Jewish community and so forth, unless there was impeccable evidence that there was a proper kosher Beis Din that was present both at the tefillah and for the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. For the milah, sometimes there's a little bit of wiggle room. Particularly since, you know, all the time we're doing Hatapas Dam Bris for a person who just is coming and showing up to us with a medical or medically performed circumcision when they were non-Jewish, and we can't, arguably Hatapas Dam Bris is not a full-fledged milah anyway. We're having we have a bezin for the Hatapas Dam Bris, but certainly for the tefillah and for the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, this is something which is completely a non-negotiable. And of course, if we're supervising the whole process and the person needs a milah, toughest tambis, whatever, so we make sure that there's a bezin for that as well. The Rav Yashiv had an interesting metshuva. Wasn't published by him. It was cited in his name, by Rav Nachum Eisenstein. I think I quoted Rav Nachum Eisenstein last time too. There was a case where there was a hastily convened bezin for a bris milah, and then the tefillah was performed in front of a regular bezin afterwards. And the question was whether the hastily convened bezin for the bris milah was a kosher bezin, because one of the members of the bezin was himself a ger. And we mentioned that there's a machlokis whether a ger is allowed to serve as a bezin for gerus, kind of like a sort of, on some level, entertaining question. Now, is it okay for somebody who himself is a ger to be a bezdin for gerus? And we pointed out, it's a machlokis achronis, machlokis haposkim, because we have a principle, ger don is chaveru ha-ger. A ger can normally serve as a dayan, he's allowed to serve as a dayan if he's judging other gerim. So Felder from Toronto, of Gedalia Felder, said, oh, he's judging his fellow ger, so he can serve as, so that's fine. And others say, no, the idea is that you need the people who have Jewish credentials from birth who are bringing in somebody from the outside. And otherwise, it would not be a kosher Beis Din. Lemaise, I found that more and more poskim seem to be coming to the consensus that it's something which would be kosher b'diavid. Rav Yoshev had a real shaila as to whether it was kosher b'diavid. So he had it as a suffix. But he said, I have a speka over here. Suffix number one, maybe you don't need a Beis Din for Mila. And suffix number two, even if you do need a Beis Din for Mila, maybe a Ger is kosher to be on a Beis Din for Gerus. So he said, it's since I have a sveik sveika, therefore I can be mako. So the question was, should we just be machmer anyway to do hatafas tambis? So he said, no, once I have a sveik sveika to rely upon, so then you can't be machmer to do chavala, because that would be an issa chavala if you're going to prick somebody when it's unnecessary. So therefore he said, you should rely on the sveik sveika and not do hatafas tambis. So it's sort of an interesting, you know, related shiloh. Okay? So those are basically the four different mahalchim within the sugya. But what we see is, according to the third Mahalik, getting back to that for a moment, according to Rav Soloveitchik, so Rav Soloveitchik said, well, according to the Rif, I have to be worried that maybe if I have a non-Orthodox Bezdin, so maybe it'll be good enough because I don't need a Bezdin altogether, according to the Shotei HaGibor. And let's say I assume I do need a Bezdin. If I do need a Bezdin, so is a non-Orthodox Bezdin always going to be batul mevatul? If assuming that a Bezdin is a non-negotiable, I need a Bezdin, certainly for the Kabbalah some mitzvahs, we assume for the Tefillah as well, I'm going to require a Bezdin. For Mila, you should have a Bezdin. So if I have a Bezdin that's not made up of Orthodox Dayan, let's say that the people there are not all from the Frum community, so is it necessarily the case that the Geirus is no good? Well, if I say that the Dayanu all have to have the requisite qualifications, so what does it mean to have requisite qualifications? So you have to be Shomer Shabbos, you have to believe in Torah Minas Shemayim. Those are some of the things that go into being a kosher aid and certainly being a kosher diet. So if Moshe writes in a few places that if you have, let's say, somebody who had an Orthodox smicha and they are Shomer Shabbos, but they just affiliate themselves with a non-Orthodox movement, he says that itself, if they affiliate themselves with a movement which denies certain basics in terms of the eternity of Torah, the non-changing nature of the Torah, of a certain fundamental yesodos ha'emuna that constitute the difference, so, you know, major differences between Orthodox Judaism and non-Orthodox Judaism, even if they happen to be very traditional in their own hanhagos and they're personally Shomer Shabbos. So he indicates a number of tshuvas that also could potentially constitute a psul. However, I uncovered, and the reason why this is really very relevant is because sometimes you'll have somebody who says, say, a woman who's a balas tshuva. She's a balas tshuva, and she discovers that, she always thought of herself as Jewish. Turned out the mother had a conservative conversion. Mother had a traditional conservative conversion. So you're going to have this woman go through a geirus l'chumra, a conversion for the sake of stringency, just to be on the safe side. But can you say that if you examine the mother's conversion and you determine that the rabbis, even though they were non-Orthodox, they were all Shomer Shabbos, they fly from like the old guard, where they maybe were used to be more traditional, and maybe some of them even got Orthodox smicha but just took a conservative pulpit, so things like that, or they were in a traditional synagogue that like we had here in Chicago that didn't have a machitza or something like that, and now you have the woman undergo a conversion. Say, okay, fine, but she's a Baal Shuva and she's from now, so it's not hard to undergo a conversion. She'll have the Kabbalah so mitzvahs. Problem is, she has a boyfriend, and the boyfriend is a Kohen. So do you say that since a Giyaris is not allowed to marry a Kohen, say, well, since she had to go through this Giyar the Chumma, so now she's not going to be allowed to marry the Kohen. Do you say, no, you know what, if we're maybe in really dire situations like this, we can find some grounds, Lakula, we could say, if we can determine that these rabbis themselves were Shomer Shabbos people, maybe it was a combination of rabbis and lay people from the synagogue. Lay people might be even better on some level, according to Rav Moshe, because they're not like buying into the whole theology and movement, perhaps. But maybe there would be some grounds for leniency. So Rav Mashash, late Rav Mashash from Eretz Yisrael, Shom Mashash, I think. So he has a tshuva speaking about some of the Russian Olim, from where there was a strong tradition in certain families that they were all Jewish. But sometimes the paperwork just is not compelling enough to rely upon the evidence that they bring in front of the Bezdin. So the Bezdin in Eretz Yisrael, just to be on the safe side, would say, you know what, undergo a Giyur L'chumra. So Rav Mashash would say, so what's the status? You have women, single women, who undergo a Giyur L'chumra, but there was a very strong chazakah, and even if you look at the Hanhagos, the things that they did in terms of the lighting the candles and observing certain holidays and things that they did, that would really seem to show that they, the mothers, the grandmothers, everybody was Jewish, but we're just because we want to be on the safe side, we're performing a Giyur L'chumra. So he writes, even though we have a notion, like when it comes to Gittin, you do a Get L'chumra, So we say it's reach a get. It smells like a get, so the woman shouldn't marry a Kohen. It's a separate discussion when you apply that principle, when you don't. Since we don't have such a principle when it comes to gerus. There's no reach a gerus. It says, if I'm doing it, l'chumma b'yama, but fundamentally, we sort of know that the person is 99% Jewish, so that's good enough that she can marry a Kohen. So then the question comes up, oh, that's what you want to say. So then the question comes up, would you say something similar? Can you engage in this type of an inquiry? Because we get these shilos. So I uncovered an unpublished tshuva from Moshe. Remember that last week I spoke about how I was mekamen to a tshuva that at the time had been unpublished, and then they published it later, okay? This one has not yet been published, except in your source sheets. Mm-hmm. So I have here a tshuva of a Moshe. I could show you, I don't have it on me the second, but if you don't believe me, I can show you the original. I have the original. It's an unpublished tshuva of a Moshe from the 1970s. The recipient of the tshuva gave it to me. That's how I happened to have it. The tshuva is no longer alive. The person who received the tshuva from Rav Moshe had to do a person very sad. His son married a woman who is not Jewish. She went to a non-Orthodox conversion. He wanted to know what's going to be with the grandchildren and all that. Okay, so Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva to this person. So he wrote, Hinei Agerus Eitzel Ha Conservative Rabbis Sheruba Deruban. I'm sorry? This is source number eight on page 2. Sheruba derubana enem shomrei Torah. For avdu cheskasim shalem, most of them are not shomrei Torah, so they've lost the chazaka. Ena geres etzlam klum. So it's garnished. Imloshi yadua bebara, sherabai zehu shomrei Torah. Unless you know this rabbi is a shomrei Torah, gamazehu sabik b'shem shikid the kamoshim, kibo misra kizu b'shul havachas mamon, since the person took this position to make money, v'lochashal isra kimokin o yachol ha'i checker, so maybe he doesn't have any nemanos, he could be a apostle aid, he would not be reliable, in which case he's the apostle to be a dime, b'shem mamon, based on achas, of course, can't you apostle yos dime, he'll be apostle to be a dime. Shokhen if I'm emes, shabala shabat tabla b'vnam, so therefore even if she had the woman in question immersed in front of these rabbis, and they were Shomrei Torah, and I'm Kshem in the Bezin, they would still be Pasla Dayanim because they took such a position for money. But be Ketvila, she'll be Fnei Bezin, she had a Giyaris. And it would be like a Tvila in front of a Bezin, she wouldn't be considered to be a Giyaris, yes?
In this generation, and due respect with your position with the CRC, you're not doing it for charity. They're paying you a salary to do it. They're paying every shul rabbi in town a salary.
Right, but if you take a position, thank you very much, I appreciate that. But if you take a position,
if you take a position
that would otherwise be improper, but you're doing it, you say, yeah, I'm going to compromise my principles for money, that's what he's talking about. You take a position when you're not compromising your principles, so then it's okay to accept money for that position, okay, if it's a legitimate position. His argument is that for money, they're lowering themselves. In other words, they themselves are really above this position in terms of their Shemir Semitzos, but they're taking a position that doesn't stand for Shemir Semitzos. They're compromising their principles for money. So that, he says, is the problematic thing. If you take a principle to compromise, you're absolutely right. A person, whether it be me or anybody else, we have to make sure, whenever we accept any position, that we're not compromising our principles in the process. It's very, very important. It's 100% right. But look at this next line of Ramosh. He says, Achim haye yadua shushome Torah. Now he's saying in the single tense, but you presumably applies to all the three dayanim. If you knew for sure, the person was shome Torah, be like, you are absolutely certain that the person performing the conversion was really a shome Torah. Ulai haye makom lakshiva b'shas hadchak. Maybe, again, this is like a, you know, racist mikos gulos. He said, maybe there will be a possible opening to be makshir this b'shas hadchak. He opens up a window, something that could at least be considered b'shas hadchak. Now he goes on to say, but that's only if it's known b'birur. But in this particular case that he's speaking about, there is no b'birur. It's not known for sure that this was the case. But from Rav Moshe, it follows that this might be an inquiry that could be conducted, at least in those types of cases. We have a shas hadchak, you know, gadol type of circumstance to at least do the research to see if that's something that could potentially be explored. Okay, I think we've reached the end of our time for today. So, Shem, next time we'll continue to discuss the nature and the role of the Bez and the various ramifications thereof.
Thank you.